Okay, so this
Okie dokie.
we're starting. This is Teresa Dietze and David Franco with Practical Work on Self, Chapter and Session 2, The Pond. My role is partly to integrate newcomers and make this work more accessible. So I will interject from time to time. I'm going to clarify or explore terms when I think some of you might not know them. And if you're new to the work, then your questions and your participation are just as important as anyone who's been in the work for quite some time, like some of the people who are attending through the Justin TV. Your input really helps everyone to revisit the roots in the work and see new facets. And it just really keeps unfolding. So, David, can you tell us the format for the course?
Yes, thank you. And what we're going to try to do is we're working through the book Practical Work on Self by E.J. Gold, and it's a 24-chapter book. And each chapter does two things. One is it sets out a particular description and discussion of, let's say, one element of the human condition and how something may work. And then it begins to discuss the practical aspects of how that particular human element might work. And then it sets out an exercise. So what and since this is chapter two, at the end of last week, we set forth for ourselves how to implement the thoughts that were discussed in chapter one. And a number of the individuals that were there set for themselves an exercise goal. And the exercise goal was such that they may have hopefully practiced that during the week. And so the format of our class will be such that in the beginning of the class of any particular evening, we're going to discuss the results of the fruits of our labor for the last week or so and share that, because when we do that, I see that we wind up getting a lot. I certainly do get a lot of fresh data about how my machine works. After we've worked on that a bit, then we'll start with the chapter of the night and discuss it in as to what it means and formulate what the exercises might be for us to work on in the coming week. Does that make sense?
Yes, that's great. And I will be able to read the comments from anyone on the Justin TV in the comment box. If you want to comment and you want me to read the comment, then just please put a few stars in front and in front and after your comment so that I can differentiate it from just chatting, and then I'll read it onto the live call hopefully when the time is right. If you're on the call, you use star 6 to mute and to unmute yourself. And we really want to invite participation. We're going to work tonight at making more room for sharing and discussion and interchange. And don't worry about participating.
Entry and exit
either
times
a lot
are off.
Or a little
this
bit.
Line is now muted.
There's some people who...
Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me? Oops. Uh-oh.
This
sorry
line
about that.
Is now unmuted.
Sorry, I muted myself. I just turned off the entrance chimes, and for some reason it muted me. So don't worry about participating too much, because some of you will be inspired and active at different times, and that's all great. Just unmute if you have a question or a comment, and then we'll take it from there.
Am I muted right now?
No.
Okay. All right. So...
Or is he... can everyone hear David? Someone in Justin TV, tell me whether you're here, David, for sure.
Well, the Justin TV can hear me. I have a separate mic.
Oh,
that.
Yeah. Yeah, they can hear you. Everything's fine.
If you can hear me, then everybody can hear me.
All right. So.
So if that format works, is that where you want to start, or how would you like to begin?
How would I like to begin? Let's begin by talking about the personal experiences that we've had doing our work from chapter one. And we were all going to pick some way that we were going to try to be successful at making our initial attempts to awaken the machine, or our ongoing attempts to awaken the machine for others. And I'd like to invite anybody who has an experience that they'd like to share, or questions that came up in trying to do the exercise, to come forward and to speak. And if you want to speak, either type something into the box on the TV or unmute yourself by pressing *6. And if nobody comes forward, then we'll probably just
talk. I haven't. Go ahead.
Well, no one's coming forward at this point. Oh, no, someone just unmuted. Who's there? Well, maybe they muted. Okay. Do you have an experience, David?
Yeah, I got an email from Four Paws, and Molly, is Four Paws on right now? And I'll go ahead and read that, and maybe that'll just be a way for us to get started, and we'll see how it goes. I was walking with my dog the other day and decided to pay attention to my machine. One foot in front of the other, hands moving forward in sync with my feet. Very simple. Then I paid more attention. My heels hit the ground first and then my toes. My hips and shoulders were moving. My knees and elbows were bending ever so slightly. I was holding on to a leash in each of my hands without thinking about it. More attention. I felt pain in my stomach and the skin pulling. I felt the pain come up into my chest and shoulders. More attention. My breathing was short and fast. It only went into my chest. Then I started to take deeper breaths into my stomach. Some of my tension was gone, and I felt calmer. I go on every day living in my little world and letting the machine run like a wild creature. I give it control because I have no desire to take that control over. I'm happy living in my little world with my little dramas. Wow. And is anyone else online maybe saying anything, or?
Not at this point.
Do you guys want any more input?
Absolutely.
Love it.
That's what we're.
Yeah, Teresa and I actually ended up doing quite a bit of work in preparation of this class. I found out that my machine was running rampant. I couldn't control it or connect to it. I was having a lot of anxiety, one caused by interacting with my mother, and unfortunately that always causes anxiety, and the other was I'm home in the blizzard, and I've been home alone for days now.
Yeah.
So I really was fraught with anxiety, and Teresa and I had to do a couple of phone calls, and it made me, I don't feel like I'm completely connected and in tune to the machine, but it made me start understanding that this machine has its own mind, and it's basically operating independently of me. So it's kind of an interesting. Go ahead.
I love that phrase.
Yeah.
The machine has a mind of its own. I love that. That's really cool.
So what did you notice about your machine? And what was the difference between your experience of yourself and your experience of your machine, if you had one?
well, when you, you know, when Teresa and I started working together, we started practicing. First, it was just accepting the anxiety that was in there. It was identifying what the source of anxiety was, and then we started practicing what we'll get into tonight about, you know, opening up and the pond and trying to release the stress. And we did that probably on a Monday, and by Tuesday, I was completely back into my old pattern again. And yeah, it's and Teresa calls me on it. I'm like, no, I'm fine. She's like, no, you're not. You're back in your old pattern again.
Right, but as I recall, we were not focusing on really releasing it as much as accepting that it was okay, that it was there, and watching the fact that the pattern comes back, and having it be okay that the pattern comes back. So and just observing the pattern without judging oneself for having the pattern. What about that part?
Yeah. Can you tell I'm still working on that?
I can. I found the way that you represented me interesting.
I'd like to share my experience with it.
All right.
Does anybody else? Or does
Mark Roach has something that he's typing in, and I'll read too. Would you like that? Yeah, there's a few things coming in online. Do you want those now or after you share, David?
Go ahead. No. Go
okay.
ahead.
Okay. Mark Roach, I discovered somewhat to my alarm how often I'm completely automatic and with no idea that that is the case. That is, I think I'm being conscious and aware, but really aren't connected, with that. I contemplated how much work and effort it would be to be consciously aware and present and directing everything. And there's another one, maybe pronouncing incorrectly, Aurealis 66. I watched my hands working together, especially when I was drawing. I found that I wasn't able to draw easily when I thought about it. When I stopped thinking and paid attention to my hands, I could feel my chest and stomach, and the drawing just happened.
Say that again. Read that again, please.
I watched my hands working together, especially when I was drawing. I found that I wasn't able to draw easily when I thought about it. When I stopped thinking and paid attention to my hands, I could feel my chest and stomach, and the drawing just happened.
Nice. Okay. What I stated is that I was going to observe how my physical machine works when I tie my shoes. And I don't look at my shoes at the moment, but I do wear shoes, and I notice that virtually every day I put them on and I tie them. And it's such a bloody mechanical process that for me, so I'd go and I'd grab my shoes, and I usually go over to this little stool and I lift my foot up to tie the shoe. Now, two things I noticed. One, maybe 40% of the time, I didn't even remember that I was doing the exercise. I just suddenly the shoes were tied and on I go, right? But then sometimes I'd remember the exercise, and two things occurred, kind of a little bit like the artist that talked. First of all, when I started watching my hands tie the shoes, it got confusing. I realized I didn't actually know how to tie my shoes. Which is moderately embarrassing, and my hands like tripped over themselves. But when I continued to apply attention to it as the week progressed, I had the exact same effect. I watched these hands like they were magic, and they just did this extremely complex act of tying the shoes. So it was really interesting to see. To caretake that in a sense, Maybe that's how it felt. That's all.
Okay. Any more experiences to share?
I was wondering something. Mike, I had a chance to read some of your posts on the site, and maybe some of the people that either on the phone or even on the TV maybe hadn't had a chance to. I found them very enlightening for me, and I was wondering if you either wanted to relate a little bit about that or read them yourself or something along those lines.
Yes, those posts were really wonderful posts, and David's talking about posts that Mike put on the PWOS website in the comment box, and so they're there where we can see them at some point. But if Mike, if you'd like to share about that, that would be terrific too. And while you're thinking about that, I'm going to read this comment coming in from Zazen. I was practicing with putting my t-shirt on first thing in the morning. My earliest awareness was I did not change my t-shirt until the afternoon. Then, because of timing being odd, I had a class and decided to change the t-shirt in the car, removing, and then there's three dots. And I'm not sure what's next.
Okay.
So, okay. Noticing my thoughts of insecurity and vulnerability and feeling public is the rest of it.
Okay. I'm a lot in the camp of Diana, and that I like this thing that the machine seems to have a mind of its own, and I think that's a very telling. I've heard that phrase anew tonight, in such a way that I can see, because that is exactly what happens when the machine is in its sleep. It's just running on its own, and as the fact that we're even in a position to begin observing it at all is remarkable. And that's a huge line to step over, and it's quite magical that we have any perspective on that at all. So it's just a very interesting beginning to start like that.
I like EJ's words about that different parts of the body have little projects that they get involved in or they go on. I find it startling sometimes to be sitting and discover that my hands have gotten up to something on their own, rubbing something, scratching, stretching behind my neck or whatever they happen to be doing. That's funny. David and I did the same thing at the same time. I wasn't watching him until I did it. And also, I find it really interesting in the moments that I wake up how few of them there are. Like I was going to watch my center of gravity and the shifts of my weight that happen as I move my body around. And I woke up a few times to find myself leaning against a wall or at an interesting angle where my posture was unusual, but in some of my more normal postures, I found it a lot more difficult to be awake to simple movement because I would forget to do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where we find ourselves, okay? We find ourselves there, but goodness gracious, at least we find ourselves, right? So that's a good thing.
Now, Zazen had an end to the comment about the t-shirt, vulnerability and feeling public, t-shirt on overhead and then over, and added, it did feel to me that the machine did not want to cooperate.
Interesting. Interesting point.
And you got a good point, David, on your point that you made.
That's really interesting, Zazen.
Now Silverdale says, our non-phenomenal part inhabits a world of silence and stillness. It is dominated by our physical part, which is an involuntary slave to sound and motion. The aim is to Silverdale, you got truncated after the word grow, and it's an involuntary slave to sound and motion. The aim is to pacify the physical part so that the non-phenomenal part can gradually grow. Could be the end. I'm not sure. There's an ellipse. So
one thing that I get from that and listening to all of our experiences of almost helplessness in the face of the mechanicality of the machine, almost helplessness, is that our hope is that if we continue to apply this exercise, it's almost as if just we have like a little inch or a quarter of an inch that we walk into that land and place a new mark there, in a sense. And that mark is the mark of the non-phenomenal self. We're suddenly like reclaiming our territory. Is it easy? Uh-uh. Does it happen right away? There's no silver bullet, as they say. This thing doesn't suddenly change. But my goodness, it does give us a possibility of change, and that's a lever that I use quite a bit, actually.
So Silverdale finished a comment, the aim is to pacify the physical part so the non-phenomenal part can gradually grow and strengthen. So yeah. What you're saying, David, about everything you're just saying is about gradually beginning to strengthen. One thing that strikes me is that so many of us bring our perfectionism into the work, and we think that maybe there's something the matter with us, or we're embarrassed if we're not able to wake ourselves up as soon as we decide that we want to wake ourselves up. And of course, the people who've been in the work for some time are probably having a good chuckle, because it's so difficult that not even with it takes a lot of experience to really gradually begin to make more and more space for that part.
Well, Zazen has been working diligently for many years, and it's interesting that suddenly he records his particular experience in this particular day, and he comes up with this phrase, it seemed like the machine was rebelling. So when we place our attention on the machine in that way, then this incredible thing happens, and then the machine is rebelling. And it's like there's a membrane that when we bring the inner attention out and place it on the machine, there's a little bit of a war of the worlds at that moment. That's a transition point. And I think it's really interesting to observe that point of transit, Zazen. And if you have more to say about that at some point, I'd love to hear it.
That war of the worlds is really important. The conflict that happens internally between the part that wants to awaken and the part, the sleeping machine, the will of the sleeping machine, the conflict can get very intense, and there can be a lot of discomfort that happens in that process of trying to wake up and confronting that and bringing those two wills into the same room. At the same time, that discomfort is really useful and can be really, the discomfort's a good alarm clock. When I start to feel that kind of pain, my attention really gets really focused, and I start to be able to use some of the exercises and step out of myself more and just do it, or into myself more and just do it.
Didn't you have somebody about brushing the teeth?
Yes, she's not here tonight, although she wanted to be. She was frustrated with herself because she wasn't able to stay awake except for a few seconds here and there brushing her teeth, and then she would try to do it and forget, and there was a part of her that wanted to just throw in the towel. After all, she was close to the tub. So, sorry. In any case, I think that comes up for a lot of us where we get really frustrated. Oh, I can't just with my intention, my ordinary intention, decide to do this and then be effective at it, and we get frustrated.
Okay. So, how we doing?
I think we're doing fine. Anybody want to unmute themselves and participate in the conversation? If you do, that's great. Otherwise, what do you think, David? Should we move on into the pond?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Unless I hear someone unmuting, I'll read the first header of the pond. The pond. The machine has no real emotion. What we call emotions in ourselves are just automatic reflexes of the mental centrum in response to the motor centrum's organic reverberations. Removing the effects of these reverberations eliminates in ourselves the larger part of our negativity and mechanical suffering. So, as we, I'm going to let David go into the chapter more. I want to remind everyone that it's okay to interrupt with questions or comments, if that's going to make it easier to understand the material. Ready, David?
Yeah, should I go?
Yeah, jump in.
Okay, I want to. This is actually a foreign idea for humans on the planet Earth. This is a totally foreign idea because we're used to the fact that the experiences of energy we have that is our emotions. Those are our emotions. But I want to just comment that it said the machine has no real emotions. Then I actually want to bring in a phrase that comes from a 17th century philosopher, Spinoza. Spinoza, in his critical work is called The Ethics. And in The Ethics, in book three of The Ethics, he's called On the Origin, On the Nature and Or, excuse me, On the Origin and Nature of the Emotions. And as he begins to discuss this whole area, he says that in essence, what an emotion, as we normally know it, as it's commonly known, is a modification of the body and an idea thereof. Okay, so something modifies in the body, like we have a reaction to it, and then we call it something. We call it happy, bad, good, anger, etc. Then I just really quickly want to read the very last sentence of his introduction to part three of the Ethics. It says, "I shall consider human actions and desires in exactly the same manner as though I were concerned with lines, planes, and solids." So when we're talking about the human condition, in a sense, this is where we find ourselves. You know, it's just all we're doing here in these exercises of attention is we're trying to just see, well, where are we? You know, where do we find ourselves? It's not a matter of where are we supposed to be or anything like that, just a matter of where are we? And that is the valuable data that we can start to actually carry around with a certain level of internal certainty that's very interesting. Okay. All right, so then let's lay down a little bit of the background of what is said here in the header to Chapter 2, where he's saying that the machine has no real emotions. What we call emotions in ourselves are just automatic reflexes. Okay, each human biological machine, okay, according to its own typicality, has its own unique repertoire of reflex mental reactions to shocks, even to extremely mild stimulations and influences coming from memory, and a corresponding sensitivity to some shocks and not to others. And then jumping ahead, we all suffer from these involuntary reverberations of the machine. We all suffer from these involuntary reverberations. We are out of control in regards to them. The machine is doing its own thing. It's, as we were told earlier, it's got a mind of its own. And when you start to observe it, you start to see it's on its own. We suffer from these involuntary reverberations of the machine, especially when the organic machine reacts negatively to the disturbances that go on. So there's a, if you really break it down, if you're working in observation at a point like this, you'll notice that it actually is a series of things occur. There is literally a contraction or some effect on the physical body. That's actually step one. It actually occurs, and then there's an involuntary response to that. That's what we're trying to discover. So something, so then it goes on to say, I'm jumping slightly ahead. I'm on chapter, page 24,
bottom. Let me
bottom.
Speak to that for just one moment.
Go ahead.
So sometimes that's referred to as being triggered, and we react, and when we react, we feel the reaction in our body. Something changes in the body, and also something changes in our energy, and then something often changes in our state, and then maybe our posture changes as we either defend ourselves or shut down or whatever, wherever we take that. So there's this sequence that happens out of that initial, as EJ is saying, the pond, that the rock that's going into the pond. And as we have a reaction to that, then it spreads. And so the work is to watch how it spreads, and part of the work is to watch how it spreads and what the sequence of responses is to that. Now, Silverdale made a comment also, pacifying the physical part consists of deliberately creating and choosing those impressions which we wish to ingest. Over time, we're able to discriminate and exercise selectivity in creation and choice of experiences and impressions. I'd like to share briefly an experience that I had yesterday. I was in the co-op, and I was very, very hypersensitive to energy, and there were a lot of people in there who they had a lot of really unpleasant energy, and it felt on my fields just about like steel wool, and I felt myself beginning to react to that. So what I did was to practice opening and trying to part the waters, and just letting the rock, letting the energy that I was uncomfortable with pass right through me without making additional waves, ripples, or reactions to it. I was really, really trying to relax my body and emotions and just let the experience be what it was. And I noticed that I was resisting the experience and resisting the people. And I noticed that as I relaxed that resistance to the experience, all of a sudden I noticed the vegetables all sitting there, all shiny and pretty and wet, and they had the most beautiful energy and the colors. And I decided, as Silverdale was saying, to intentionally take those impressions from the vegetables in and to focus on, and as he was saying, be selective in my choice of the experiences and impressions. And as I focused on those vegetables and began to really enjoy the energetics from them, then all of my sense of distress went away. So that's an example.
Good. So you introduced the idea of like a pebble being tossed into the pond is, you know, in a sense, what happened to you as you went into that experience, and the involuntariness of it is in a certain way where we start to find. And on page 23, EJ goes on and he says, we have no authority over these pebbles, by which is meant external or internal shocks, nor do we wish to. But we can have authority over something, but what? If we hope to eliminate these involuntary reflexive organic reverberations in the machine, we must take authority over the machine, not in the ordinary way, but in a very special way. Goes on, we can learn to open the water before the pebble. It's a really nice vision for me. We can learn to open the water before the pebble, so that the biological machine offers no resistance to the pebble and the reverberations do not occur. In this way, the negative emotion will at most be only momentary. This exercise is recorded in the Western tradition as the parting of the Red Sea. And then, so let's see. Jumping ahead on page 26, shortly after these secondary reverberations begin to manifest themselves throughout the machine, we ought to notice that the mental centrum has decided that because the sensations usually associated with one or another emotional state are present in the machine, some emotional state must also be proceeding in the machine. Now, my question there I wrote down is, how fast does that process take place? I don't know if anybody... Nobody's saying anything.
Not at the moment.
Huh?
Not at the moment.
And then somebody here in the area said, it happens very fast. It happens so fast, in fact, without this form of the attention that we're going to be placing on it, it's instantaneous. It's virtually instantaneous. It's there's no discernment between the disturbance in the pond and the formulation of what the emotion is. It's incredible. It's pretty quick.
And we have a lot of assumptions about it that happen in that same flash of time.
That's the whole point, exactly. Yeah, that all mechanically come to bear. It's not a thought process where we decide, oh gosh, let's see, I think I'll feel this way right now about that. It just goes boom.
Okay, so Zen is saying, in my experience, it has an initial word of judgment and then more ripples in my body. Lightning.
Nice. Yeah.
Good, bad, yuck, ooh, ah.
Really? Okay, I'm on top of page 27 if you have the book at all.
And Aureolus is saying, I'm sorry, it happens so fast that I don't remember the beginning.
That's excellent.
It happens
so fast we don't remember the beginning. So we're launching ourselves on our little boats of observation onto the pond to see what happens. EJ goes on to say, if we were able to actively observe the machine, over a long period of time, we would notice something peculiar, that the sensations and impressions of the machine change continually in direct relation to these secondary organic reverberations, which we call negative emotions, because they are produced by the machine. Question?
Is there a question in the room there?
No. I'm just posing. Does anyone...
Anybody have questions?
Basically, what is being posed here is that we have an impression, a reverberation, and all this stuff occurs. We are in a reactive mode in that case. And the author is telling us, he's using this phrase, he says, that's a negative emotion. So if the same reaction is, let's say that we're sitting there, we're at work or we walk into the store, and then somebody comes up and they say, oh, and they have a big smile, they like us, says, I really like what you're doing there. And then we have this big puffery go on, right? Is that the same thing? But negative emotions aren't painful. All we like some of them, but they're nevertheless the same reactivity. They're not anger, pain, hatred, so on and so forth. They're also the same reactive, pleasurable emotions, quote unquote, I call them. Anything that is reactive in source, by definition of this mode of work that we're working on right now, is what's called a negative emotion. That's all. Okay? If these emotions were intentionally produced in the machine's true emotional centrum, they would not reverberate throughout the machine. They would be called emotions, not negative emotions. Mechanical emotion arising in the mental centrum is only momentary because it is a reflex of the muscles. It seems to be more lasting only because we see the wake of its destructive passage, its rippling reverberations to the muscles and the inner organs. Now, bottom of page 27, real emotions, because they are feelings and not mental responses to muscular reflexes, exist momentarily, they continue indefinitely by decision of the non-phenomenal self. Real emotion is not a personal subjective mood, but a means of emotional communication. Does this make sense? Have we had this? Do we understand what's meant by that?
I'm not certain.
Go ahead.
I just sense that there's some questions out there. What is the and Mark Roach is saying, nor I. I'm wondering how it is that we, inside the laboratories of our machines, begin to make the determination what is real emotion and what is negative emotion. And I'd also like to invite questions, because I can't think of all the questions you might need to know the answer to.
Okay.
Hey, you guys, can you give an example of real emotion?
Yes. David, can you...
I like the grocery store story.
What did you like about the grocery store story?
Because I could relate to the example.
Yeah.
So, in terms of real emotion...
We went through the book HBM last year. What year are we in? 2010? Yeah, last year we went through the book HBM
human biological machine.
Yeah, that's right. And in one of the sections on observation that was discussed there, and it was discussed in terms of something called the interplay between the machine and the non-phenomenal self or the essential self, there was an interplay that occurred. And at some point, if you begin to get a little bit of a sense of your feeling of for your non-phenomenal self, let's call it your essential self, or whatever word works for you, and what occurs then is that when this process of awakening starts to occur, which is the attention of the non-phenomenal self on the machine, there arises something, we might start to call it a form of caring, but it's referred to as adoration. And in a sense, the adoration comes up, it comes from within. When there's an adoration of the essential self for the machine, and then an interplay starts to happen between the two. And it's like a recognition from a deeper space, and it does not have the tenor of a reactive emotion. You feel at peace with yourself when that particular type of emotion is occurring. So for purposes of right now, one that I would like to identify for the group that has worked for me is adoration.
So, Diana?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, you know when we went to Nia class together? And
yeah.
I believe that the instructor that we were with produces real emotions. One of the things EJ says about real emotions is that they don't have to be communicated in words, because when you experience the energetics, he didn't say it exactly like that, but the energetics of the real emotions are self-communicating. They communicate directly to the people, radiate out to the people who are in the room. And as you notice, the emotions that the instructor would go into were really easily able to be picked up in the body and to be felt as you would resonate with her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the characteristics of real emotion. Now, Silverdale says, the non-phenomenal part of our self experiences itself as a vibratory sensation. Over time, it develops a range or spectrum of vibratory sensations akin to language. These are genuine feelings which can be communicated to another. And that's, I like that very much. And Forepaugh said, it seems like negative emotions can be called fake emotions. Does that make sense? It does to me. Ariala 66 said, I had an experience where I had done something very difficult emotionally, and as I was resting after that, I felt something rise in me and realized in the moment that I didn't have to do anything. I let it go, and I felt it go right through me. It's got an ellipse after that. There's some more to that that maybe he'll put in. And then he said, I like the adoration. Yeah, I like the adoration too, because the adoration is the opposite of that perfectionistic self-judging thing that can get a hold of our work. And then just like there's fake emotions, there's fake work or pseudo work where we're trying to do our work on ourselves, and what happens is what we're really doing is trying to fix ourselves and judge ourselves and make ourselves beyond reproach, and it's kind of tyrannical. And instead of being able to adore ourselves, we're making ourselves wrong and bad, and that's not really work. Now, Zazen said, I think one level of real emotion is when I decide to communicate a message with a specific feeling tone. It is usually not a spoken word, but a communication radiated. I have asked myself, what would a loving person do right now? And then I intend to, and then there's another one of those dratted ellipses. To, that, and Mark Roach said, that sounded real good. What I just said. Oh, I didn't see the bottom part of that. Good. Well, I'm glad that made sense. So I'm going to ask the people on the Justin TV to post like two or three comments instead of one large one, like right after one another, so that you don't get truncated like that, and it'll make us a little bit smoother as we're trying to do it this new way. So David, what do you got there?
All right, so we're on a voyage here, and in a sense, the part of where we can wind up is this place called real emotion. And I'll make one quick comment, on then I want to move on, because our task at hand is still before us. And the only, when individuals are in that real emotion state, there's also a certainty that exists there. Now, the certainty may not be a mental certainty, but there's a certainty of understanding on this in a non-phenomenal sensitivity. And that's where you find, like, people who are quite good at voyaging are working with the mood that is created in by these real emotions. It's a very interesting place to be. But so, I want to move on so we can get to the part, another part. I'm going to just kind of skip ahead real quickly here for a couple of minutes.
Just a second, David. There's a comment, and I wanted to say, you're talking about that certainty. When I think about being in the zone where I'm more in real emotion, one thing that's absent is the questioning mind. There's a feeling of just doing what I'm doing and being what I'm being without a lot of second-guessing myself. And I think that is one of the keys, keynotes of noticing, for me anyway. Galpaz, I hope I pronounced it right. Gratitude might be a real emotion. Sometimes it seems that the only thing to do is to say thank you. Now,
yes,
David, did you want
good.
To know who's there on the line? I mean, on
not
the TV?
Not at the moment.
Okay.
No, that's good.
All right.
So we're once again, we're caught in between worlds here. We're looking at one world that will develop as we develop the non-phenomenal self, but we're still, and I'm now at the bottom of page 29, I'd like to... Negative emotion which arises in this way. Don't forget, we're still talking about, in part, where we live, you know, in this reactive world, which we, our subjective misjudgment about the manifestation of early others, these can be easily eliminated in ourselves. So we see, quote-unquote, somebody else doing something. We have a negative emotion towards them and a judgment. 99% of the time, what we do is just leave it at that. That guy's a jerk. She's a, you know, an idiot. That person is this or that. And so those are like, and then you just dismiss it, and it's gone. But it says here, the subjective misjudgment about the manifestation of others can be easily eliminated in ourselves. There's something we can do about that. No effort, no great effort of will is required for this little alteration in our attitude. Even very ordinary people are able to decide to give others the benefit of the doubt. If we can learn to open the water before these reflexive reactions to the machine, we would no longer suffer the secondary subjective effects on our own machines, and that's what we're talking about, right? That's where we get stuck. And So I'm going to jump ahead to the top of 31. We can use these organic reverberations of our own evolution by containing the outward expression just as we would contain the steam in a pressure cooker. Interesting. The process of containment of negativity can be viewed as a process of controlled alchemical fusion, a method of containing and magnifying the natural chemical and electrical reactions produced by automatic organic reverberations. If we allow the machine to express these negative emotions openly, the force of our work would soon be dissipated. And what we're talking about there is that we naturally just express, we have these reactions and we express these negative emotions. The problem with that is that it creates a situation of a dissipation of energy. And now we're talking about finding a way, maybe we can hold that energy for ourselves in a different manner. Okay. But how can we contain our reactions to the annoying manifestations of others? We can see that an ordinary human being is not responsible for his or her manifestations, that he cannot be. How can we resent or feel anything but pity for these sad little involuntary spasmodic emotional upheavals reverberating painfully throughout his machine and leaving a sort of palpitating self-oblivion in their wake? The condition of complete slavery to the mechanical self should arouse in us some feelings of genuine pity in the state of the mechanical human being. We can use these feelings of pity toward our own evolutionary work, applying the resulting higher emotion of pity toward the activation of the higher emotional body. But we are to arouse the higher emotion of pity. We must not look down upon the mechanical humans with feelings of arrogance and superiority. Isn't that the easiest thing to do? Because we are all fish in the same barrel, so to speak, no less and no more. I'm jumping ahead to 32, the first complete paragraph. We can actually begin to develop the will of the awakened machine just using the special attention in which we deliberately observe the negative states of others. At the same time, observing our own machine, remembering what the human beings called emotions are just growlings of the stomach and the intestines. How are you doing? Okay, we're going to go for about 2 minutes, take about a 2 or 3 minute break. So we're going to do a couple more minutes, and Teresa, do you want to come in at this point, or should we just proceed?
I was just thinking about this quote that I was talking with you about earlier today. It's a quote by Mir Baba. There's a last piece of it that I think very much applies. Only through precipitation of acute inner crises can even the most earnest seeker be forced to face the pressing issues of his psyche and thus create the opportunity of dissolving them. There's some way that we tend to avoid having feelings or judge ourselves for having feelings rather than sitting in the feelings and being a party to them fully and including that conflict of consciousness that comes up between the will to awaken and the will of the sleeping machine. And I think it's very important when conflict comes up not to try to put it to bed too quickly, whether it's conflict by being uncomfortable from looking at someone else or whether it's internal conflict. If we can sit in it and start looking around inside with flashlight, then I think the forces, inside begin to create a big opportunity for becoming more self-aware and also for dissolving the real issues.
We're going to take a quick little break, a couple minutes. In the interim, let's start working on formulating what we think the exercise posed by this chapter might be for us and how we can implement it in ourselves, okay? So just 2-minute break, and we'll break now.
And everyone just stay on the line.